Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. As California goes, so goes the nation, or so they say. 39 million people, the world's sixth largest economy, politics that are deep, deep blue. The state is pushing back against President Trump on multiple fronts. Climate change, sanctuary cities and states. There's even a proposal for statewide single-payer health care in the Golden State. This hour on Point, California on the progressive edge. You can join us on air or online. What do you think of California's policies? Are they leading the way or on their own? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, you'll hear from the CEO of Girls Who Code, Reshma Sujani. She'll be telling new women graduates at Scripps College to take risks and live bravely. But first, joining us from Sacramento is Sean Hubler, the deputy editorial page editor and a columnist for the Sacramento Bee. Sean Hubler, welcome to On Point.
Hello.
Hi. So California, it's the sixth largest economy in the world, voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. It is highly diverse and very blue. I live there. I know it feels different than the rest of the country. Set the scene. What's happening in California?
Well, welcome to the resistance.
Explain.
As you pointed out, California voted 2-1 against President Trump. And although his partisans like to think that the attitude here is sour grapes and, you know, Democrats are angry and Hillary Clinton's backers are angry and so on, in fact, the state's values are sort of more or less opposite from his campaign platform. And so Californians are worried about that. So for a lot of political and economic and demographic reasons, the state is pushing back and has wants to defend its priorities against what it views in some areas as kind of an existential threat.
In his January State of the State address, California's Democratic Governor Jerry Brown made that clear. He said that the Golden State must remain true to its core principles.
As we reflect on the state of our state, we should do so in the much broader context of our country and the challenges it faces. We must prepare for very uncertain times and reaffirm the basic principles that have made California the great exception that it is.
Great exception, Sean. This is an important part of the California identity, isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is. I mean, Trump ran on a platform, for example, of America First. He wanted to build a wall and bar refugees and screen Muslims and so on. California is a global state. It's incredibly diverse. Most of Los Angeles speaks a language other than English. Sacramento, where I work, has one of the largest refugee communities in the country. It's a majority-minority state. Latinos surpassed whites here a couple of years ago as the largest ethnic group. So diversity is a big part of the core value here. Trump ran on dismantling Obamacare. California was an early adopter of the Affordable Care Act, and a third of the state is on Medicaid at this point because of the expansion. Trump ran on promises to bring back the coal industry and fossil fuels. And even though California has a long kind of history of exploiting its natural resources, the state, environmentalism has been for at least the last 50 years and longer a big part of the state's identity, and Governor Brown is an international leader on climate change, and he does view this as an existential threat and a really important priority. So,
and because California is on the leading edge on a lot of these issues, environment, healthcare, because there are so many immigrants there, undocumented included, that state might feel the bite of Trump's policies more than others.
Oh, absolutely. The Medicaid, the rollback of Obamacare alone stands to cost the state billions of dollars. That's a big concern financially. Environmentally, California's has for something like 30 years set emission standards for the country because of a waiver it has through the Clean Air Act. On immigration, California has diversity and immigration is woven into the state's fabric here. Families would actually, suffer and have been in the past when there have been crackdowns in the state on immigration in years past.
Well, there are, as I understand, 2.5 million undocumented in California, and the majority of the state's residents, Democrat and Republican, believe they should be allowed to stay in the country.
Sure, absolutely, because we fought this battle already. A lot of these fights that that Trump is and his partisans are picking on a national scale have already been litigated in California. So they're familiar battles. And the rhetoric is almost a repeat in some respects from the 70s or the 80s or the 90s when California debated and argued and fought passionately over things like immigration and what – how to hang on to the middle class and how hard we were going to push back to clean up things like smog and oil spills off the coast. So these are very familiar battles here. And at the moment, the progressive arguments have won out.
Sean, I'd like to ask you to pause for a moment so we can bring in from Half Moon Bay, California, Kevin DeLeon. He's president pro tem of the California State Senate. He is the force behind Senate Bill 54, which would bar state and local law enforcement from helping with federal immigration enforcement. And he's just introduced legislation to strengthen the state's environmental protections against the Trump rollbacks. Senator DeLeon, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jessica.
Hi.
Honored to be here with you.
Thanks for getting up very early California time to be with us. I know it's unusual, but I want to ask you about some legislation you introduced that would phase out fossil fuel use to generate electricity. This is truly cutting-edge environmental legislation. Can you explain why you're making this push right now?
I think threefold. The answer is actually very straightforward and simple. One, I want to provide a tax cut to the people of California by lowering their utility bills. Two, we want to further decarbonize our economy so we can attack the consequences of climate change. And lastly, it's about economic growth. It's about putting people to work. And in California, we have created upwards up to 500,000 jobs in the clean energy space. And I want to put this in context, Jessica, because it's very important for the rest of the nation to know this. There are more jobs in California in the clean energy space than there are coal mining jobs in the entire nation by a 10-to-1 ratio. And by sending the right market signals through legislation, we attract the necessary capital that helps us create the technologies to reach our incredibly ambitious target goals. And it's been working in California. We have delinked and decoupled carbon from GDP, which means we have actually grown the economy. We're the sixth largest in the world. Simultaneously, we are 39% less carbon intensive as a state in the aggregate since 1990 level. So we're demonstrating it's actually working in California, contrary to what Donald Trump and Scott Pruitt and Rick Perry are saying in Washington.
Let me ask you about Scott Pruitt, Rick Perry, and Donald Trump, because you are pushing what is, by your own admission, an aggressive policy to phase out fossil fuel. I mean, truly phase it out for the use of electricity at the very same time that we're seeing Washington go in the other direction. Is this in some way meant as a statement about what's happening on the national picture, or are you trying to set a new course for the nation?
Well, it's actually beyond a statement, so it's beyond political rhetoric or symbolism, given the positions that the Trump administration has taken with regards to clean energy and the positions on fossil fuels. We're actually proving in California that it's actually working. By 2022, the investor-owned utilities in California will probably reach 50% generation of electricity from renewable sources. So we're talking about 28 years into the future, 2045, when our goal is to be 100% clean energy in California, it's doable because we have a scientific methodology. This is not just throw a number, you know, on the wall and let's figure out if we can do it. But I think what you said, it's a model for the rest of the nation and for the rest of the world, because many folks are watching very closely what we're doing in California as opposed to what they're doing in Washington.
California has also long had more aggressive emission standards than the rest of the nation. Eventually, the nation caught up, but now the president is trying to roll that back. What leverage does California have to hold its own ground and keep its policies on the environment, especially emissions, in place, even if the feds want to change?
Well, it's unfortunate that Scott Pruitt and President Trump want to roll back the fuel standard efficiency measures that we have pioneered in California. That means that even if you don't believe in climate change and say you live in Alabama, if you drive a Ford F-150 pickup truck with an EcoBooster, a brand new one, you're actually getting about 10, 12 miles per gallon extra. That means you have more money in your pocket and you're polluting less, even though it's an internal combustion car, pickup truck. That means more money, and it doesn't make a difference in Republican or Democrat. So the car manufacturers, what Ford, Chrysler, and others, they want to roll back the fuel efficient standards that were nationalized by then President Barack Obama in 2011, pioneered by California. However, California has a tremendous amount of leverage, given we are the largest consumer when it comes to cars in the entire nation. And I know the manufacturers do not want to create two types of specs, one car specifically for California, another car for the rest of the nation. So California still has a tremendous amount of leverage.
You're sort of holding the line. The last point you made is they don't want two sets of specs. So do you hope to hold the line for all car manufacturers on behalf of the nation?
It's my hope that, you know, as a car consumer, you know, state that we can still hold the line through the power of economics as opposed to the power of ideology or politics in Washington.
This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about California and its go-it-alone rebuke to the Trump administration on climate, immigration, and health care. You can join the conversation. What do you make of California's push for single-payer health care? Would you like your state to do the same? Are they forgetting who won the White House? I'm talking with Sean Hubler, an editor and columnist at the Sacramento Bee and president pro tem of the California Senate, Kevin DeLeon. Folks, I'd like you to listen for a moment to then-Democratic Congressman and now Attorney General Javier Becerra, who appeared in December on MSNBC's Rachel Maddow show, saying that California would have a role providing a counterpoint to the Trump administration's agenda.
We'll have a role because we're California. And more often than not, as goes California, so goes the nation. But I will say this, I don't think California is looking to pick a fight. We're just ready to fight if someone tries to stop us from moving forward some progressive values that have helped so many Californians.
Senator DeLeon, one area where maybe you could say California is picking a fight is in its stance on sanctuary cities. You have supported legislation which would make California a sanctuary state. Would you explain what that means?
Well, let me clarify something, because I believe the term sanctuary state or sanctuary city is actually a misnomer, because for the folks on the right, it's a highly charged political word. On the left, it's somewhat misleading. But we're not looking to pick a fight, actually, with the Trump administration. But we're here to defend our values, family values, because no government should separate mothers from their children and children from their fathers. There's been an extraordinary departure from past policies from then-President Barack Obama as well as George W. Bush, where the focus was almost exclusively on immigrant felons, those convicted of serious and violent crimes. Now they have focused on separating children from their mothers and, like I said, fathers from their children. This is not who we are as a great state. This is not who we are as a great nation. So we're not picking a fight. What we're saying very clearly is that you're not going to use local tax dollars and state tax dollars to enforce immigration law. That's your job. You go ahead and do your job. You be you. We will protect and serve our community, irrespective of who you are and where you come from. So there's not going to be a double tax on the people of California. And the police, our police are not going to be a cog in the Trump deportation machine. We're not impeding the federal government from enforcing federal immigration law. That's the Department of Justice, or more specifically, Homeland Security and ICE's responsibility to enforce federal immigration laws. But we're not going to get in the business where we're aiding and abetting by separating families. Again, that's not who we are as a great state.
Already,
sadly.
Sorry, Attorney General Sessions has issued guidance saying that grants should be withheld, at least from sanctuary cities. Mm-hmm. In theory, this could escalate, and the federal government could withhold federal dollars from California for refusing to cooperate in deportations.
Let me say this. Number one, it's illegal, what Jeff Sessions is attempting to do. Number two, it's unconstitutional. And lastly, it's un-American. It's un-American to threaten any city or any state on withholding dollars when we're dealing with human trafficking, when we're dealing with drug trafficking, when we're dealing with the issue of terrorism. We just witnessed what happened in Manchester, United Kingdom, and England just the other day. And they would actually withhold dollars that deal with terrorism just because we will not be a cog in the Trump deportation machine. It's
so
illegal.
Are you setting this up to become a legal fight?
Un-American.
Do you see this decided in the courts?
Well, it looks like most likely will be decided in the courts. The Trump administration already lost round one in California. The county of Santa Clara, as well as the county and city of San Francisco, have taken President Trump to court. They have lost in the first round. I'm sure they'll be appealed, and we'll see if it goes all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. But we believe that we have strong legal ground. And again, we're not impeding the enforcement of federal immigration law. All we're saying is that we're not going to use our local resources, our local tax dollars, to enforce a federal function, which is not a local function. So we're not looking for the fight. But it's unfortunate because Jeff Sessions, as well as Trump and Steve Bannon and Steve Miller, have really raised the pernicious rhetoric against immigrants and have really scapegoated them. I heard Sean earlier today, and Sean was right on point. Well, in California, we went through this already 22 years ago. And perhaps there's a short-term victory, and I'll be a little partisan, you know, right now. There is a short-term victory for Republicans, but it's a Pyrrhic victory because in the long run, it doesn't end up well. And they should take a lesson, a page from California, because for the Republicans, it surely didn't end up well. And that could be the actual outcome at a national level in the near future.
Senator De Leon, thank you for your time, and we will continue to watch your go-it-alone fight against the White House's policies.
Thank you so much, Jessica. It was fantastic.
Thank you. Sean, can you help us understand this is a stance that's genuinely at odds with the national federal government, and there's a lot of confidence in the California delegation as they're fighting the White House. Paint the political scene for us there. How blue is this state?
California is quite blue, but it hasn't always been so. You know, people will remember, the rest of the country will remember, California, some very famous conservatives have come out of California. Richard Nixon came out of California. Ronald Reagan came out of California. And, you know, and even as recently as the 1990s or so, the state was about registered Republicans made up – Republicans made up about 40% of the registered voters. Now – they're only about a quarter of the registered voters. And a lot of the reason for that is, as Senator De Leon pointed out, a lot of the reason for that is that these battles that were fought in the past over the last several decades here cost Republicans and conservatives quite dearly in the state. Not just because of politics, there have been big demographic changes here too.
Let me point out, I just want to underscore this, that California has a Democrat governor and a Democratic Senate and Assembly. So it is one of the very few states in the nation that is entirely controlled by the Democratic Party. So
that's correct.
That does give it a different kind of complexion as it tries to go up against the White House. And I think we heard a little bit of that when John Burton, the outgoing chair of the California Democratic Party, spoke to Democrat delegates at a state party convention that happened just this past Saturday. He actually cursed the president and put two middle fingers in the air. You might hear a beep because we're not putting his curse on air, but listen to this.
There's a lot of people out there, and if we don't fight for them, nobody else is going to fight for them because they don't have any power. They don't have any power. Now, all together, Donald Trump.
So that was sort of shocking when it made the rounds nationally, but it was well received in California, huh?
Well, John Burton is a familiar figure in California politics and known for his salty tongue. So it was sort of in character. But to the rest of the country, they're not really in on the joke, right? So I'm sure it came off as a sort of a shocking act. And this was at the this was in front of the Democratic, the state Democratic Party, which is, you know, the most partisan of the partisan. But yeah, California is pretty blue. I mean, the politics here are largely between the progressive left and the moderate left. The arguments tend to be about environmentalism versus jobs, only to the extent that they're kind of a matter of degree. But there are still Trump partisans in the state. About a third of the state voted for Donald Trump. There are kind of areas in the Central Valley and elsewhere where Kevin McCarthy, the House Majority Leader, his district is fairly solidly red. And there's some Devin Nunes as another.
Although they're mounting a challenge to him. The Democrats have targeted his district recently.
Absolutely.
Yeah. A pause for a moment. Joining us, because I want to bring in someone else, joining us now from Los Angeles is Dan Schnur, a longtime political strategist for California Republicans. He writes a weekly political column for the San Francisco Chronicle and teaches at the Annenberg School at USC. Dan Schnur, welcome to On Point.
Jessica, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being on. So, Dan, California has a long history of being an outlier state on environment, on immigration. What accounts for California's progressivism?
I think there's a couple of things that have moved California decidedly to the left, Jessica. One is, I think Sean correctly mentioned, is the changing demographics of the state. There has been such a marked increase in the number of Hispanic American and Asian American residents and voters in California, that the state's politics have pushed markedly leftward. And that is almost exclusively, not completely, but to a large degree, as a result of the debate over immigration that both Sean and Senator De Leon have been talking about. A lot of members of my former party have made the case that Latino and Latina voters in particular ought to be more responsive to what Republicans have to say on issues relating to taxes and education and national security. The problem is that the immigration debate really represents a boulder in the road for Republicans here. And as long as the type of approach to immigration that we're seeing on a national level characterizes the Republican Party here in California as well, the state's politics are going to continue to move leftward. There's certainly other factors as well, but that's certainly the overriding one.
Certainly the demographics are a huge factor. The state is 39% Latino. But in Texas, there's also a very large and growing Latino population, and you don't, at least yet, see that kind of leftward bent. What accounts for the difference?
And, of course, there's another factor going on here as well. As many of your listeners know from around the country, coastal America tends to lean much more leftward generally, not just in California, but in Oregon and Washington, in the Mid-Atlantic, in the New England states. You tend to see much deeper blue tendencies on the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, whereas the inland parts of the country tend to lean much more conservative. And so the fact that California has these demographic changes that we've talked about, combined with its geography, I think brings it to brings its politics to the place where it is today.
Let's go to the phones for a moment. George is calling from Alpine, Texas. Hi, George. What's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. What's on my mind today is I grew up in Texas, and I grew up in El Paso, and actually graduated from the University of Texas at Austin. But interestingly enough, I just retired to Alpine, Texas. In the last decade prior to that, I lived in both Southern California and Northern California. And I felt like from a government governance standpoint and a policy standpoint, California does such a better job of taking care of its citizens than Texas does now. It's really quite disappointing. You know, I grew up when, you know, Sam Rayburn and Ralph Yarbrough and Sissy Bernthal, you know, were respected figures. And now I feel like with Greg Abbott and with Lieutenant Governor Patrick, that they don't represent the people of Texas, much less the minority people of Texas. They represent a very dark view of the world that's basically grounded in a dark religious right, you know, misguided philosophy.
Sounds like you're missing California. George, thank you for the call from Alpine. Sean, you know, I look at I listened to what Senator DeLeon said earlier, and they're pushing for very aggressive changes on environmental standards. They want to make California a sanctuary state. The politics there are very Democrat, but can these initiatives get through the legislature there?
Some more than others.
Will it be a sanctuary state?
Probably. As Senator DeLeon pointed out, the bark of the term is worse than the bite, in a sense. It's been sort of used by as a kind of a powerful term, but all that it essentially means is that local sheriffs won't be pushed to detain minor criminals for longer than they are legally supposed to be detained in order for ICE agents to come and retrieve them. The state has no intention, for example, of making it harder to deport serious criminals and felons and things like that. A lot of the sheriff's departments, there's some debate in the state, partly because the sheriff's departments are concerned about losing federal funds that they get for detaining, you know, for holding people for deportation. And that amounts to quite a sum in some of the larger counties. And so they're concerned about that to some extent. But generally speaking, I think that the law is kind of on the side already of sanctuary states. There's a lot of case law that backs it. There's a lot of the major cities, not all, but a lot of the major cities in California are already sort of as a matter of practice tend to focus on public safety as opposed to immigration enforcement. And there's a reason for this. And the practical reason for it is, as again, dating to the 90s when California was arguing over a statewide proposition that would have denied public services to to undocumented immigrants and kept undocumented kids out of public schools and so on. It was declared unconstitutional, but the fight over that and the sweeps and so on that went on just sort of showed that what happened was the immigrant communities kind of shut down. They stopped talking to law enforcement. It was a lot harder to enforce the law. There was much less trust. People
kind of
retreated into
shadows. Let me
actually
interrupt you for a moment and bring Dan back in. Dan, I incorrectly introduced you as a Republican earlier. You are a longtime independent now and a noted political analyst in the state. Prop 187, she was talking about, really left its political mark on the politics of California. In what way?
Okay. Well, when Proposition 187 was on the ballot in 1994, the state of California was roiled by this debate over undocumented immigration, much in the same way that the rest of the country is now, as Sean and Kevin both noted. I think what's worth noting is when 187 was on the ballot, again, an initiative, as Sean stated earlier, that would have denied government services to undocumented immigrants and their families, when it was on the ballot, it passed with just under 60% of the vote, 59% plus in California. When the USCLA Times poll asked a question on that same topic just last year, we saw that only 40% of Californians still supported the denial.
Dan, I'm going to pause you there because we have to take a break. We'll wrap back to it on the other side. I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about California fighting what they call a good fight. You can join the conversation. Are you with them? Is this your fight or not? My guests are Sean Hubler, an editor and columnist at the Sacramento Bee, and Dan Schnur, a professor at USC's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. And Dan, I rudely interrupted you right before the break, but you were making a point that California's politics on immigration have changed in the last 20 years.
Well, and that's exactly right, Jessica. Like I said, Proposition 187 passed with roughly 60% of the vote in 1994. Just a year ago, statewide polling showed that on the question that 187 presented, whether undocumented immigrants and their families should be denied government services, only 40% of Californians now agreed with that idea, which means that over the course of 20-plus years, one out of every five Californians has changed their mind on this really important topic. Now, part of that has to do, as we talked about earlier, with the tremendous growth in the Latino and the Asian American population. But I think it's important for your listeners outside of California to know, because they are facing the same kind of discussions and debates in their own communities now, that in addition to the growth in these minority communities, there is overwhelming opposition to the denial of government services for undocumented immigrants among young Californians, and not just young Latinos and young Asian Americans, but young Caucasian, young white Californians, millennials, are overwhelmingly supportive of comprehensive immigration reform. So some of the change is because of ethnic changes in the state's demography, but much more of it is generational.
As
millennials grow up in communities and in schools that are much more multicultural than their parents or grandparents experienced, they simply don't see the same need to separate according to race and ethnicity as previous generations did.
I'd like to turn to look at California's push on health care as well, because we can't ignore that. At the very moment the federal government is rolling back provisions or trying to roll back provisions to expand health care, California is expanding it, wants to expand it to such an extent that it would be universal coverage in the state. I'd like to go to the phones now. Christina is calling in from Columbia, South Carolina. Christina, what's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. My point, I'm yay for that, even though I'm in South Carolina. I've paid regular insurance for 20 years. It goes up every year. It's 20% of my paycheck, regardless who's got it. Single payer, I think, will work best, and I'll let y'all comment off the phone. Thank you.
Thank you. And Billy is calling in from Centerville, Maryland. Billy, what's on your mind?
I just heard a comment from, I'm not clear who it was, but somebody speaking from California made the comment that as California goes, the rest of the nation goes. And the discussion was about emissions control. I'm sitting here right now at my place. I got three or four or five cars that I'm not allowed to drive now because I've not complied with these emission standards. And I got a red flag on my registration because I've not complied with the local emission standards. I live in an urban county, which gets federal money. And now I have a red flag. If I get pulled over, I have to pay all kinds of fines for these vehicles, which I've not had tested for emissions yet. There's jets flying ever all around here.
Why haven't you complied with emission standards?
I haven't had time. And I think it's kind of a BS government regulation that
got
we
it.
Really don't need. We've got tractor trailers. We've got ships polluting the air. We've got coal plants polluting the air.
Thank you for your call. Thanks for the call. Rama is calling in from Beverly, Massachusetts. Hi, Rama. What's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. And my what's on my mind is thank you, California, for really it's just sanity. It's sanity. It's common sense. And it really is the ultimate conservative approach to life and to our precious resources. And the way the Senate articulates it, it really just shows how crazy the Trump thing, especially when he mentioned 500,000 renewable jobs just in California. Now, in the country, he could probably tell us how many there are in the country renewable jobs, millions, and total coal jobs, 50,000. I feel for all those coal people, but sorry, you're going to have to find other jobs.
Thank you for the call. Sean, there are a few aspects of California that are unique beside the demographics. There's the fact that you have a booming tech economy there and a lot of money in Silicon Valley. What is the influence on Silicon Valley on the state's left-leaning politics?
It's a little mixed, actually. It's interesting. I was listening to your last caller talk about coal jobs versus
green jobs.
Renewable jobs. One of the reasons that coal jobs are disappearing is Silicon Valley, in a sense. A lot of the coal industry has been automated, and so that automation has come out of the tech industry and the tech sector here. Silicon Valley, in some respects, exerts a kind of a libertarian influence in some parts of the area. But generally speaking, there's a lot of money in tech, and a lot of that money is young money. And as Dan aptly pointed out, the attitudes in California are largely shaped by this generational shift to a more sort of tolerant and liberal viewpoint. California has a one thing that's kind of interesting, as Dan talked about Prop 187 earlier, that argument is something that Texas didn't have. As your caller from Texas pointed out, and you pointed out, Texas didn't have that shift. Well, they didn't also have this big fight over immigration. That fight over immigration kind of crippled the Republican Party in the state here and hardened attitudes. And so one thing that's kind of just sort of an asterisk about California is that a lot of Californians are responsible for putting Trump in the White House, actually. The people who sort of dug in on the right included people like the founder of Breitbart News is a California organization. The Claremont Institute is in California, and they're responsible for a lot of the thinking that put Trump's policies that shaped Trump's agenda. Anyway, California has that thread moving through it as well.
Dan, to you, I've read that the Attorney General, Gavin Newsom, has proposed making California a donor state, meaning they would put money aside in a pot to save in case the feds should cut off California from federal funding because they're breaking with federal policy. I also know that California has twice voted to raise taxes on itself. California voters in two elections wanted to raise their own taxes. It is such an outlier in this respect. Do you think that some of these policies are meant to define a different future that's apart from the nation? I mean, there's even talk of California becoming its own country.
Well, I don't know that the talk about California independence is particularly serious. There's some very frustrated state residents, but there's no indication that's something that's moving forward in a legitimate way. But your point about economic issues is a really important one. Governor Brown marshaled a huge amount of political capital to pass a tax increase during his first midterm election. For the most part, though, California does tend to be somewhat more economically centrist. You were talking a moment ago about Silicon Valley, and I think, as Sean indicated, this is a community that's very emblematic of the state's broader political approach, which is very progressive on cultural and social and environmental issues, but probably somewhat more centrist on economic issues. And in fact, one of Senator De Leon and Governor Brown's greatest challenges with their climate change agenda has been not just from the remaining Republicans in the state legislature, but an increasing number of moderate Democrats who've been elected under our top two primary system. And so Democrats from the Central Valley and from the Inland Empire who do tend to be very progressive on cultural and social issues, but somewhat more moderate on economic issues, have been somewhat more cautious in this regard. So I think the state does lead the way on the type of issues we were talking about earlier. Economically, it's worth remembering a point that you raised earlier, that out of the 50 states in the country, 25 have Republican governors and Republican legislatures. 20 have a split between the two parties. California is only one of five states that has both a Democratic governor and a Democratic legislature. I think the second biggest, if I'm not mistaken, is Oregon. And so it's small wonder that any number of committed progressives in other parts of the country look to our state for leadership. But I don't know that on economic matters it's probably as much of a harbinger as it is on some of the other issues we've been talking about.
Don, the state hired former Attorney General Eric Holder to represent them in fights against Trump. What's his role? And has he been busy?
His role is to step in and buttress the state on all sorts of legal challenges, because a lot of the nuts and bolts work of protecting the state's values on particularly on environmental issues is going to be duked out in the courts. In addition to the Attorney General, Javier Becerra has been pretty busy. They sort of brought in Eric Holder as backup, as someone who understood the federal legal landscape and who could bring that kind of manpower to the fight. I think over time he'll be a lot busier than he is at the moment. These are sort of slow motion battles, a lot of them.
Is this a moral cause for a lot of these electeds, Don, or is it a political fight? Is it a way to become a star on the national stage?
Yeah.
Both. Well, yes.
Yes, it is. I mean, as I said, California has the righteousness, if you will, of a state that has already thought about these issues hard and experienced them personally. I can't really overstate, in a sense, how personally, for example, the battle over immigration played out among Californians. I mean, it's one thing to say theoretically, no government services for immigrants. It's another thing to have your child turned away from an emergency room or your grandmother, deported.
Dan, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'll give you the last word. Is California in the lead or out of step with the nation?
Wallace Stegner said California is America only more so. We tend to think it's America only faster. The demographic changes that have changed this state's political landscape are in the process of coming to the rest of the country.
Dan Schnur, thank you so much from the University of California. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
Sean Hubler, columnist and editor at the Sacramento Bee, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
In a moment, founder and CEO of Girls Who Code, Reshma Sanuji, and her advice for new women graduates at Scripps College. That's coming up next on Point. Founder and CEO of Girls Who Code, Reshma Sanuji, has been named one of Fortune's 40 Under 40 and one of Forbes' most powerful women changing the world. Earlier this month, at a commencement for Scripps College in Claremont, California, she spoke about the need to teach girls to be brave as society teaches boys, and to throw caution to the wind, not focus on perfection.
My obsession with perfection, with pedigrees and credentials, was just a long detour that kept me from doing the thing that I really wanted to do, which was change the world. Bravery, not perfection, was the key that unlocked every door that I have walked through since. It took me 33 years to figure out that brown girls can do white guy things too. But today, Today, all of you, you don't have 33 years to waste. Our world is transforming, and it's transforming fast. And if you all don't step up now, we're going to be left behind. And we see the same thing happen with young girls at Girls Who Code. The girls in our program, they're brilliant. They're talented. They're just as capable as the boys. But they're afraid. Afraid of imperfection, of critical feedback, of trying something that they may not excel at right away. They figure out early on what they're good at and they stick to it. And they avoid less intuitive, more competitive subjects like STEM and computer science. They're not taught to be brave the way that the boys are. So what can we do? We can't topple the structures without addressing culture. And the culture is the problem. And the solution, newly minted graduates, is you. Learn from my mistakes. Don't wait for that perfect credential. You have a degree from Scripps College. That is all the validation that you need. And when it comes to all the other women and girls that you're going to encounter in your life, your colleagues, your employees, your mentees, don't let them play it safe either. Let's push each other to be brave. Push each other to take risks. Challenge each other to go out of our comfort zones, to tiptoe out to the very edge of your ability. Because if you do your part, if we all do our part, then we will unleash the most generation of women leaders this world has ever seen. I know every graduation speaker says this, but class of 2017, you are really going to change the world. Congratulations.
Reshma Soojani, founder and CEO of Girls Who Code, speaking to women graduates at Scripps College in Claremont, California. To watch a video of her address, go to our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.